August speaker would be Catherine Djogut, but not about what I have mentioned. She would choose some different topic, probably some theoretical issues. Are they members of this forum, of this podium, would speak about some precise approaches? Anton Vidocko is one of curators of the manifesto, which chose this year not the shape of an exhibition, but the shape of a school. And as I understand, they would not present canvases, but they would teach, as far as I understand. Yeah? But you will know the details from his, you'll learn the details from his presentation. Joseph Bechstein heads, obviously, in Moscow, he heads the only or almost only initiative of non-academic education in the sphere of modern art. And today we'll be able to hear a couple of words about that. But the main aim of our conference is to shape some initiative for the support of modern art. So all people are invited to share their experience, to share their comments, which literature we are lacking, what should be translated, probably not specifying the authors, but maybe some disciplines which should be included into the educational system and into the printing program, publishing program. So I pass the floor to Kate. Kate Djogut. Well, what I'm going to speak about has something to do with the first part of our today's session. It's a great pity that our speakers from the first part are not present here, because I cannot start any dialogue with them, and I thought that I would be able to do that. So hopefully later on we'll be able to start some discussion. So is that better? Yeah. Okay. So I hope that, for example, among the audience, we have people who heard the first part and so probably know what the context is. I think that we have two topics, the main topics, which are very close but still they are different. One of them touches upon the education as an alternative form of art production, what Victor Miziana spoke about, and in Russia we have rather long history, because almost all the movements of the Russian and Soviet advance guard and new advance guard started as the movements of self-education, starting from the Union of Soviet Artists, which included scientists and philologists. So it was arranged as a team of people who gathered and delivered some presentations on different foreign authors, on foreign painters, artists, and different materials. So, and Victor spoke in detail about that. And there is second topic. We do not have any experience about that. So we do not have any experience in the sphere of art education, despite the fact that we have separate initiatives, and probably Joseph Bechstein and Helen Sokolovskaya, who will later on appear, they will speak in more detail about that. That's why probably I should be the dean of the art department of a new school which is to be opened in Moscow, so there are a lot of initiatives, but still we cannot say that there are quite a lot of them or that these initiatives are very prominent, because no student or no students in the most Russian well-known institute institutions, so for example, such as the Surikov Arts School, start some mutiny and will rebel or get rebellious and demand that they are taught the modern art or the art which should be taught not in the mainstream of the academic approach. So we now teach the art for the art scientists. So we also teach art of Europe, art of Germany, art of the United States, but I'm not going to speak about that, although I'm a real expert in that. So I don't want to raise this topic because I would have an opportunity to speak about it during the round table, during which we'll be able to discuss some acute problems, practical ones. I'd like to speak about the very first part. The education is an alternative form of art production. Here I would like to take some didactical standpoint and to describe what we have here. So what's the origin of this term? Art is a didactic form. So if you take some dictionaries, you will see different new words such as identity, such as gender, but didactism is not in the dictionary. Now, education suffers deep crisis not only in Russia but also in the world. We know that we have multiple choice exams, not really exams. That's why the history exams is senseless, because the student only has to know when Peter the Great founded, for example, St. Petersburg, but he doesn't have to know why he did that or some other profound issues of the history. Victor spoke about the American system of education. I know it quite well because I know it inside out. I used to work inside it, and I'm not very optimistic about that because this is not only fragmentation of the knowledge, but also the student do not have the whole picture of the situation. On the contrary, the whole picture is a sort of a taboo, and sometimes students, they are supported by the personal experience, the term which is very vulgarized now. I think that this branch of science, which became a false science, which is called postcolonial studies, this branch of science leads the student to speaking that my father was born here and my grandmother was born here, that's why my ground is like this, and this is my own standpoint, and no one can object that, because this way, for example, a student expresses his identity. Sometimes this identity may be suppressed, or if we speak about the identity of native people, of Indians, for example, and so it's just a real nonsense which you can hear during the exam. So the education suffers a great crisis, a deep crisis. So the art is in its own crisis, and that's why it tries to get a hand of assistance from the education, which is in crisis itself. It so happens that universities get a lot of investments, and people try to get supported also by museums, by art galleries. Now people try to get support from universities, which is regarded as some pure zone of support. This is one of the rarest spheres of our life, which cannot avoid getting involved with the market, but still it is not included in the market. I mean that it doesn't trade the images, it doesn't trade itself, maybe. And that's why they provide the opportunity for the people to start their relations on quite different basis. That's why we hope very much that this sphere will be helpful. So 10 years ago, great hopes were laid on the sphere of communications because people thought that in the sphere of communications, the market would not be dominating. For example, if this is a sphere of friendship, this means non-commercial relations. So my main idea is that we are to find some positive approaches in appealing to the education. So there are a lot of different initiatives, there are a lot of different documents and features. I think that we, for example, start our cooperation with the education. We can appeal to the education and it will be efficient only if we get rid of this model of communication. As Victor Miziona said in the morning session. And I think that this biodidactism is also very complicated issue from many standpoints. So why education and communication? Why we speak about that? What are the origins of these ideas? This is when the art of the 20th century reacts to the old art. Sometimes it destroys not the medieval age arts, but usually the 20th century art tried to destroy the 19th century art. And our reality depends on very much depends on what happened in the 19th century. Three things happened there: modernity, bourgeois revolution, and Marxism. I think that these are the three main pillars of the intellectual horizon of the 19th century. They are just one thing. This is a way of realizing the democratic accessibility and affordability of different consumer goods, including the art. This is the Marxism idea that everything is a good, is a product, a consumer good, including the works of art, such as canvases. So, and in modernism, we see two main lines. The first line is criticism of consumer fetishism, and this criticism stems from the capitalism. So, this is the Olympia of Monet, when the main character is depicted not as a Venice, but as a prostitute. Monet, for example, tries to say that canvas is just a product, that art is a prostitute, and Malevich's black square. Sometimes people say that this is the symbol of Russian or Soviet socialism, but we should remember that this canvas was painted during the capitalist system, and when it became evident that quite different form of property was dominating and the institutional forms were introduced, and artists had to pay rent when they launched their exhibitions, and after that they had some state-organized, state-arranged exhibitions. So the situation became quite different. So in 1919, Malevich said that he would no longer paint any canvases, and so the Soviet Malevich is something which happened later on. But supremacism was a reaction to the capitalist market and an attempt to demonstrate this thesis that a canvas is an empty sign, a gap
between this is a sort of fit that won't go. But nevertheless, this is a work of art and it has great value, which may not necessarily be expressed in money. And then, ready-made by Duchamp, this is just a commodity in the literal sense of the word. I have bought something and I have exhibited it. There we are. This strategy was very strong in the early 20th century. But we now get the impression that it has completely exhausted itself. Something happened sometime back. Recently, we have seen the last attempt when Hampstein made a shelf where he would place some commodities there, or Jay Kuhn would set several vacuum cleaners in Poland. There was an attempt to present it like some sort of criticism of capitalism. But very soon, it became clear that it is a self-deception. Hans Hacke may have done some sort of research which shows, demonstrates that art is a commodity. But in order to create something innovative or critical in this aspect, what one needs is something pretty serious and something complicated. But the complete line of institutionalized art is related to this aspect. Galleries, museums, artistic education is, in a way, oriented towards this way of perception. A picture which reflects in some way that things around are a way of commodity. But in point of fact, there's no critical pathos there at all. This is really a contradiction of modern art. So we are now all in the artistic fair, where all these works of art have been made as if to criticize the world. Instead, they are being sold in this world. There is another line in a way to address this problem, not for criticizing art as a commodity, rather creating it as an alternative, overcoming some alternative zones which were there in the Soviet Union, but in the Western world too we saw some zones where market laws were not that strong. And we had hoped that what would be possible it would be to overcome the very structure of the art of the 19th century. And this structure views an artist, any object, which is portrayed or shown by or depicted by an artist. Usually it's perceived as criticism of naturalism, realism, but this is not relevant here. The point is that this very distinction between, say, hierarchical distinction, non-democratic, between what an artist is, and there is no this should be destroyed. Rodchenko puts it very plainly, an object should stop being a thing and should become another object. So instead of the system subject-object, we should start a new system of a subject and a subject. This is a relationship between us. Artist, first of all, this is communication in general, and a work of art is being received as some sort of personality, and the very idea of project also is relevant here. So in this regard, communication of community, it's some sort of creative environment on the one hand, but on the other hand, it is a work of art to say. As I was saying, this institutional system does not really perceive this artifact, but in one sense, the history of art has seen several very important upsurges of such attitude. The first was in the 1920s in the Soviet Union among constructivists by Rodchenko, who said that relations between artists are more important than their works. They have just mahjong plays, games, and their meetings were far more relevant. And other works of art that found expression here. Another surge was in the 1950s, 1960s. This is Moscow conceptualism, which existed in this zone beyond the market, which made the situation absolutely unique when Gross describes this, artists could meet, could talk, it was not in any way or was not necessarily related to some sort of artistic production. A lot has been said about it, but it was Bachstein too, amongst others. And then in the 1970s and 1980s, the Western conceptualism to some extent, or Radio early Urch of the factory period, art indeed was in another economic zone. The factory was like an alternative space towards mainstream artistic market. We are not really prepared to talk about it. Later on, it happened that the Urchel left this alternative and built themselves into mainstream. But that was the time of a surge of neo-avant-garde, and that is the time that saw you almost concurrently in the Soviet Union and the West. And the third upsurge was in the 1990s. Of this sort of art, which focuses not so much on the works, rather than on the relations between artists, communication between artists. You know, it's received the name of relational aesthetics. I suppose an artistic magazine translated in a way. It was written by Nikolai Bulyumov, who is a great friend of this country. Viktor Muziana seems to have been one of the proponents of this viewpoint with his projects of the 1990s. So during the 1990s, which we will remember, this rhetoric was highly developed, as we remember. I would like to find the time to study the rhetoric. Not the project, but the rhetoric. What was written about the project? What was the motivation given? Because a great number of positive words that people were explaining, they would always focus on art that had to be alive, that had to develop. But what is life? It really kills all sort of discussion. You never can oppose to it and say, look, I don't like live art. You won't say, I like dead art. Well, then you would put yourself out of it, totally. So a work of art becomes like a subject. Since you cannot say, though some people do say so, but it's considered to be wrong, saying that I like this girl, she's so pretty, but that one is so ugly, I would much rather she were dead. Well, really, you can't say such things. It's really awful. So work of art is perceived as something live, then it means that all of them are good. This picture is good. That picture is good. Because the artist puts his soul into it. A lot is being said about dialogue, about joint creation. And the result should be some kind of singular position. Something pretty personal. But there's nothing you can put forward as an objection against it. But on the other hand, you should manifest solidarity because of this attitude towards art. Projects where artists work together or jointly with a curator. You can't say this is wrong. The curator is an artist as well as other artists. And very often we hear the word organic. Today, Victor is mentioned by didactic. What does organic mean? Because it hasn't been imposed somewhere. We don't need models, samples, no methods, as Victor was saying. And what is important is when you put this word, adaptation skills should grow as a result of such activity. There is no such word as flexibility. It seems like a positive argument in favor. What I find interesting about the art of the 1990s is the huge gap between this rhetoric and real practice. The rhetoric describes it in such sweet terms that even we're unknown to socialist realism. But what do we have in practice? We know this utopian station exhibition, and it so happened I could see some days before the exhibition opened, and people who were staying, happened to be there, would see the most narrow circle. The top exhibition was something like artists never worked together, but what was meant that they participated in some joint project and their works and art show some sort of unusual solidarity, extraordinary solidarity. But you could see some 4 days before the exhibition opened, there was a few people who really were very, very solid, showed a great number, amount of solidarity. That is, a lot of people, a few people who knew each other very well, they enjoyed themselves. But later on, artists would come who would not really belong, and they felt they were lost. And Martha Rosner described it in a very good way. Martha Rosler said that she described the difficulties that she had to face as a participant in this project who didn't belong to this narrow circle. So for her, it all turned out into major problems because it was the summer, a very hot summer. So it looks like we are building some new clubs. All this rhetoric about relational aesthetics, about solidarity, about circle of self-education, sets
up some sort of new club.
And what is the difference for me between this new wave of art in the 1990s as compared to the 1960s and 1920s? What's different about today? What is different that it has all been institutionalized? What is going on now is not related to art alone. We see very intensive institutionalization and commercialization of the sphere of communication. Because all of us know it, because we are users of mobile phones, internet, things that despite although the post was there, the mail was there, the telephones were there, but communication remained relatively free. But no global capitalist, post-industrial capitalism, is commercializing things pretty fast. Communication is now one of the major areas of investment in the direct and symbolical sense of the word. Thus, in a purely artistic sense of the word, even Warhol first was like a person who was like an alternative art, but then he became an established person. Things may could go the wrong way, meaning the reverse way. He might have started as an established artist, then he would show some sort of alternative. And institutionalized forms were found for it. I won't dwell upon it in detail, but new economy of art has been developed as an alternative towards old economy, where a painter makes a painting and then sells it and receives money for it. Now the situation is reversed. The artist receives sponsors' money and then does a project. This really changes things. What does it mean? That the curator becomes like a customer. The curator is the person who provides the artist with the funds and money for him to be able to produce his work. So what is important now is that niche work has been fake, like custom made. We don't really think a lot about the economic consequences. The so-called free curators and points of fact is very much involved into this new market. So when Victor says about adaptation opportunities, to me it sounds very much like adjustment to the market conditions. And indeed this gives rise to criticism, because critics are now supposed to just give an announcement instead of giving a review. Curator works before the artist starts working on his piece of art. When he places like an order, in the same way, critic demands, a demand is placed on the critic that he should come and make a review before the exhibition opens. This surely brings about a decline. So we have this huge gap between the description, between the rhetoric of this communicative aesthetics and reality. Why indeed am I so unhappy about it? Because this rhetoric, which is very positive of communication, relational aesthetics rhetoric, serves to conceal economic factors. This rhetoric, in point of fact, just conceals money. Because when I see something, some object, my first idea, thought is, who was the customer? Who ordered this? How much money was paid for it? Rather, how did they build this system around? In this sense, I'm very much interested in, say, what Anton Vidopoulou would be discussing, and I immediately ask a question. I'm very much interested in how, in this system of education, students and teachers together, the manifesto, but who would be receiving money and who would be paying money? Somebody has to pay for participating, and others will be remunerated for participating. I'm quite familiar with that, so I would like to know how you will address this subject. The second subject is that this gap, this rhetoric, which is very positive about communication, is an illusion of sort of lack of conflict and democracy, like a free territory, as we know this way to describe themselves for artistic communities, both in this country and abroad. It just looks like somebody else gets up and they quickly just say, well, things run splendidly with them, they have no conflict. Well, another thing that I've got to mention.
Don't regard it as a joke. It's just as a matter of fact. This very system of utopia, unity of people who are working together, who are self-educating, and that there is no leader at all. So this system functions as a sex community, and this is not a joke actually, because there are many facts like that in the history of art. So this concerns the circle of Russian constructivists. This concerns very much such a well-known phenomena of 1960s as the movement group and Automule group, which was described by Robert Fleck, quoted by Victor Miziano. And I think that this issue should be studied very thoroughly. Now we have rhetorics that we have full freedom. There should be freedom of absolute freedom of education, with no paragons, with no models and templates. You know that the upbringing of children in the West, such a rhetorics, it was triumphant, and now we have the first children, the first generation which was brought up like that. And as I know, the psychologists, they face quite different challenges, quite different problems. For example, the problems of my generation was connected with the fact that we were forbidden to do this or that thing, or we were not given this or that, and sometimes children had different complexes, and the psychological analysis was based on that. And now psychologists have, or psychiatrists, even they have quite different problems, have quite different challenges, that children who are brought up in absolute freedom, they are worse on neurotics than the children who were restricted, who were forbidden to do this or that. And if you analyze the psychology of different kids, this would be very, very much true. So I think that this all happened because of the falling. I think that the roots of this problem is the refusal from these narratives during the era of postmodernism, but the postmodernists are not to be blamed for that. I think that the collapse of the Soviet Union is to be blamed for that. The balance of these economic blocks didn't work, and instead of the economic and political differences, there was an attempt to introduce some other things. There was an attempt to introduce some big ideas, some big narrations, and I think that this was one of the ways of depolitization. And George Ogump, I think that he also took the same approach, so to shift everything to this of psychology. There was a big gap, I think, between psychology and ideology, and psychology is dominating. So you can ask any person quite just in the street what is good, what is bad, and he would say that he had some problems in his life, he has complexes, and he should attend some psychological training. And I think that many meetings, many assemblies, which we have now, they are construed just like those trainings. For example, when people try to gain some self-confidence, and one of the works which is of Victor Olympia, which is exhibited here, I think this is a quite nice parody on such situations when people gather in order to improve their self-estimation. And this domination of the psychology over ideology and economy and so on and so forth, I think this is what should be changed. Art should be regarded as an education, I think. But if art is continued in order to make people to continue communicating, I think that nothing good would come out of that. One of the artists I talked to said that we work together, and I don't think that the results are great. And he said, well, the result is not the most important thing. We communicated with you you, and I know that my personality develops very much. So I don't think that we should focus on that, on the relationship production, but we should focus more on the knowledge production. We should come back to realizing, to understanding that the big idea should be a sort of horizon or an objective for the art. And the art exists for the sake of this very big idea and not for the personality development of painters or artists. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kate. Very intense, very emotional.